This is the Quality News Network. The stock market rallied today with the biggest one-day gains for the Dow and NASDAQ in more than 3 years. We'll have the closing numbers at the end of the newscast. The Supreme Court ruled today that holding military trials for detainees at Guantanamo Bay Prison violates both U.S. and international law, but the decision did not mention closing the prison, which President Bush has said he would like to do once a suitable place for the prisoners can be found. Responding to the ruling, Bush administration officials say the decision will not affect how the prison is run. President Bush says despite the ruling, he'll search for a way to move forward with the trials. In Gaza, Israeli warplanes set a fire at the Palestinian Interior Ministry office, where Israelis believe terrorist activity is planned and directed. The strike was launched just after 1 o'clock Friday morning when the building was deserted. No injuries were reported. That strike came soon after reports that Israel was halting its advance into northern Gaza. Palestinian militants have reportedly offered a conditional release of an Israeli soldier whose abduction prompted Israel to attack. However, Israel denies receiving the offer. In Washington, the FBI has evaluated a laptop computer that was stolen 2 months ago. It contained personal information on more than 26 million veterans and family members, but officials say none of it was accessed. The laptop was recovered after an informant tipped off authorities to its whereabouts. In Russia, foreign ministers from 8 nations are meeting in Moscow. They say they expect a response from Iran about a package of incentives aimed at halting the country's nuclear program by next week. But one official said it may not be a simple yes or no answer. Earlier, Iran's foreign minister said a response would not be ready until late August. On Capitol Hill, the House has voted to allow drilling in the Gulf of Mexico and other U.S. coastal areas. That would end a 25-year ban, but 2 senators from Florida have vowed to defeat the bill. In Alabama, former Governor Don Siegelman was found guilty today of trading favors for campaign funds. The case was tried as he was running for the Democratic nomination for governor, which he subsequently lost. In Pennsylvania, an evacuation order for tens of thousands of residents of Wilkes Barre has been lifted. But thousands of others living along the Delaware River have now evacuated as rivers continue to rise. 16 deaths throughout the East are now being blamed on flooding. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Federal Reserve raised interest rates today up a quarter point to 5.25%. That's a 17th straight hike. The Commerce Department reports that the U.S. economy grew at 5.6% rate in the first quarter. The gross domestic product was aided by improvement in the U.S. trade deficit. The SEC and Justice Department are investigating more than 50 companies for stock option fraud. The probe aims to find out whether the stock values were manipulated for the financial benefit of top executives. Freddie Mac reports that mortgage rates rose for the third week in a row. The nationwide average for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is now 6.78%. Ford Motor says it will not produce 250,000 hybrid vehicles by 2010, as previously promised. The company says it instead wants to focus on vehicles that run on alternative fuels. Verizon Wireless has announced that the penalty customers pay for breaking their cell phone contracts is being reduced. Starting in the fall, the fee will be based on how much time remains on their current contract. The $5 bill is being redesigned. The design changes have not been announced, but it will still feature President Lincoln's face. The New York Times reports that the average price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is now $2.87. Light sweet crude settled at $73.52 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 217 points, NASDAQ up 62, S&P 500 up 27. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the
and
amps eight. Go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Night Shift, where the children of the night fight the radical right. It's Foxed Up with John Fox. Foxed Up is brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream every day. Be one louder by calling 877, the number 4, head on. That's 877-443-2366.
Singer who I think has a lot of courage because this is a dark.
All right, everybody. Hopefully I'm on now. It seems like we had a little bit of a, shall we say, an internet technical glitch. Are we there, Agnes? Are we there? Ah, lovely, lovely. All right, everybody, let's try this all over again. Welcome aboard to Thursday night's Foxed Up. Oh, boy, and was the start of it Foxed Up. Anyway, we got we have a very, very, very full show for you here tonight. We're going to do a little bit of a musical interlude. I don't know how much of this you might have caught before, but anyway. We are going to expose you to a young man at the end of the hour that you may have missed. His young man by the name of Travis Meeks, and he headed a band called Days of the New, which you may have heard on bumped in on Fourth Estate Radio here and there. And he had the unfortunate problem of having his latest record come out the week after the 9/11 attacks. Talk about bad timing. Anyway, we'll get there at the end of this hour. But also, last night, the end of the show was a little bit disturbing, shall we say. Our good friend Ben rang in regarding a possible chemical attack by the Palestinians on Israeli territory. Now, I got immediately on the phone yesterday afternoon and rang my good friend Anthony Lowenstein, who is an author and a journalist, and the subject of his life is Israel's Palestine. And so we have him scheduled to be on the show in the last hour. And that should be a really interesting conversation, because I rang him straight after the show last night, asked him about this story, and he had not heard it yet, and he has yet to see any confirmation on any of the Israeli news sources. So this would tell me that it may not have been true. However, even just the report of it, as Ben and I were saying yesterday, isn't good. So we're going to get there, and we're going to save some of the heavy stuff for the end. But, you know, you hear a lot of griping and moaning about, you know, big business damaging the environment. And this is, you know, kind of normal and to be expected, because it is large industry that fights things like, you know, emissions controls and whatnot. However, Honda has a different idea, and one of my personally favorite green news sites is treehugger.com, and they sent me to cron.com, and Honda's just set up to build a new plant, and maybe I'll save this till after we get from the break, but these guys are opening up a plant in the United States that they want to have be a zero, listen to that again, zero landfill footprint manufacturing facility. And I think something like this is to be commended, and we will get into that when we get back. And just to do the housekeeping real quick, since we had kind of a rough start there, we are chatting at headonradionetwork.com. Just click on the chat link and dive into the pool. All the fine folks in there are always up for a good chat, throwing links in, relating to this, telling me if I've made a mistake, you know, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, and you're streaming this show on the WhiteRoseSociety.org, and Ben Birch is running his fundraiser at the moment, so go by. He never sends a bill and do the right thing. And if you want to get in on the program, it's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And, you know, get on the phone. You know, have you been doing anything really green in your community? I want to know what people are doing, because I have a rare story here that we'll do when we get back on one of the big manufacturers trying to do the right thing. But I still believe that it comes down to you and me in our local level on our own street to make this thing happen. So you're here on Foxed Up for a Thursday night. Stick around. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the Head On Radio Network. What will you say? And if there's no way to
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
I'm just a kid.
I'm 6.
I'm 9.
I'm 4.5.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
I'm a new mother, and my baby and I are healthy. But every minute, a woman dies in pregnancy or childbirth. I'm proud that our government supports programs that help mothers and their families around the world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support U.S. assistance for voluntary family planning programs worldwide. That's 202-224-3121.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't, ha 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
Brilliant. Oh, I love my producers. They just come up with some of the best bumping music. It's all just really, really groovy. Anyway, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. I am John Fox coming at you from Sydney, Australia, where it is tomorrow and it is the afternoon. you can find a link to the Tree Hugger article at on the Head On Radio Network blog on my show post. But it says here, Honda Motor Company laid out plans Wednesday for a $550 million plant in Indiana to build fuel-efficient vehicles, saying it believes U.S. consumers are turning away from powerful gas guzzlers. Now, that would be a good change, wouldn't it? Indiana, which has lost 98,000 industrial jobs since 2000, persuaded the company to build a 1,700 acres west of to build on 17 acres west of Greenburg, pardon me, midway between Indianapolis and Cincinnati on Interstate 74. Honda said that the new plant would go online in 2008 and would eventually produce 200,000 vehicles a year with about 2,000 workers. That will boost Honda's North American production to 1.6 million vehicles a year. Honda sold nearly 1.5 million vehicles in North America last year and plans to sell 1.7 by 2009. Company executives said the plant would produce four-cylinder vehicles with engines built in its plant in Anna, Ohio, and would be designed to switch quickly between models. This plant was critical, said Catherine Madden, an analyst with market forecaster Global Insight of Lexington, Massachusetts. They can't continue to push for greater market share with adding production capacity. Honda is likely to produce its new Fit subcompact car and Civic models at the Indiana plant. But where it starts to get interesting, I got to scroll down a bit. Where'd the other article go? Hold on, I'm just having to surf a link. Okay. What it says here is that the two models and the Civic might even be a hybrid as well. Models will meet new international environmental management standards like all other Honda plants in North America, except the new transmission plant in Georgia, but it's working towards certification. But even more interesting, they want to make a zero-waste-to-landfill factory. They say our goal is that this plant in Indiana will have the smallest environmental footprint of any Honda auto plant in North America. This is the kind of thing that we need to be seeing from industry and from manufacturing, is to not go for the cheap, fast buck, but look more long-term. And from what I understand, you buy one of these Hondas, you're getting a more American-made car than you are if you buy your average Ford or Chrysler, which is awful depressing. However, if Honda's going to do this, I reckon that this is the kind of situation where this is by providing what the people want and need and what the planet may need, they will win in the game of capitalism. I mean, that's all I can think. Now, I would think that this would have to be somewhat embarrassing for the American car manufacturers, who still seem to be very, very slow on the uptake of alternative fuels for vehicles. I mean, they've fought tooth and nail to try and loosen the emissions controls, which they did, and I've got another story about that, about how much of the world's greenhouse gas is produced in the United States, and it's gotten worse since Bush got in. So anyone who tries to say that whole clean air initiative garbage was anything but Orwellian speak, full of crap as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, Agnes, you would think they'd get the idea by now, but as we've seen many times in the past, money does not buy brains. And it sure doesn't buy common sense, that's for damn sure. Something that I seem to have found in my life, money does not buy brains, that's for sure. But, you know, I really hope this goes well. One, you know, 2,000 more jobs for an area that has lost almost 100,000 manufacturing jobs since 2000. You know, it's a little frustrating when the foreign car makers are hiring American workers as the American car makers are firing American workers and hiring more, Chinese labor. You know, I've been hearing, you know, insane things that brake discs and stuff for American cars, they're all built in China. Why are we doing this? I mean, seriously. You know, I think any American would even pay 10-20% more for that brake shoe if it were coming domestically. And I think that this is important for, like, every country. And again, this goes to what I was talking about yesterday. All this moving stuff around extra distance just to save a corporate entity a buck is just wasteful. You know, going back into the concepts of Wowsernomics, where the current economic theory is actually more like a baseless religion, and everyone's had to buy into it. And just because you can get something cheaper from over there doesn't mean it's a good thing. You may have saved a couple of bucks, but you have burned a whole lot of ancient sunlight to get that thing there so you could make that extra money while you ripped off another worker. You know, I don't doubt American ingenuity anymore, but I do doubt American industry, whether they're interested in moving forward with any of that ingenuity. You know, I want research to go back to universities, not corporations, in most things, but that's... I just think it's really, really pathetic that, you know, I mean, I'm so happy that Honda's doing this. I applaud them. I'd probably even buy one if I was in the market for a car. But I sure wish Ford, you know, Chevy, any of these guys would do this. You know what I bet you could sell a lot of? Re-release the Thunderbird with a hybrid engine. Let the old fat redneck have his big Lincoln. But get it on biodiesel. I'm not telling you you can't have the car. Just do something so it's doing less damage. Oh, I'm getting worked up slowly but surely here. we're coming up on... Yeah, I think it's a good idea too, Agnes. A pink biodiesel Cadillac. I love it. I love it. Yeah, Mary Kay would be proud. Hey, maybe that's where we could get the money, you know, for the first prototype. You know, get an old one. And, you know, convert it. It'd be kind of fun. But anyway, we'll pick this up after we get back from the break. We're coming up on the bottom of the first hour of Foxed Up for a Thursday night. thank you, Agnes. And we're going to be right back after this break. Please feel free to get in on the program. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. You can email me at John, J-O-N, at fourthestateradio.com, and we'll be back right here on the Head On Radio Network. Singing the bio song in my bio sub with my bioreactor, feed me bio grub. Stream it out to the bio web, it's my dream, I'm the bio sub boy. Well, it's not a lake, it's an old rock quarry. I won't see much, but I don't worry. My bike gives me light, so I think it's steady. Oh, yeah, my bio sub, I can't wait. Well, let's be honest, it's just a pit, and I'll be sitting in the bottom of it. I don't know how long I'll stay, maybe till the fish say go away. Singing the bio song in the bio sub, my bioreactor gives me bio growth.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Head On. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. Head on radio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7.06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on a Thursday night on the Head On Radio Network. And we're going to go straight to the phone. Spike is on the line. Welcome to Foxed Up, matey.
Hey, Gonzo greetings down under. First time I've called this show, by the way, there.
Yeah, Gonzo greetings. Agnes, that calls for a hello, Cleveland.
What's that?
We have a first-time
hello,
caller
Cleveland!
Sound, Spike.
Hello, Cleveland!
There you go.
Hello, Cleveland!
Welcome aboard, Spike. What can we do for you tonight?
Well, first things first, just since I'm not quite in the chat room mood from the wild things that have been going on here in Easton lately.
Yeah.
So let everyone know, yeah, I'm fine. I never got flooded out. But Easton, Pennsylvania was heavily in the national news. CBS and NBC did stories for their nightly news from Easton tonight. And MSNBC was here all day. And ironically, yesterday in Bruce's show, before the national TV news was involved, I was talking about the flood in Easton. So the Head On Radio Network actually beat cable television and network television. The story.
Woohoo! Well, so have the rains started to pull back for you yet?
Yeah, actually, ironically, most of yesterday wasn't that bad. There was a light shower for about an hour in the wee hours in the morning, and today it was a beautiful day. So it really hasn't rained lately, but it rained so much over the weekend and leading up to that. And Easton is downstream from where it really rained in the States. So we were kind of like sitting ducks for the footer.
Oh, right.
A little bit further away from us, Scott. So, because two rivers meet in Easton, and so we're almost kind of, I hate to keep using the New Orleans comparisons, but we were kind of in that situation where we're at the end of one river meeting another river.
And right.
That gets hairy when you have heavy, heavy rain.
Yeah. No kidding. And when you were, I think it was when you were on Bruce's program, you also mentioned, was it you that mentioned that Trenton, New Jersey was in trouble too?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, they also crested today, although their flood, not as big as they were thinking it was, and they didn't crest as high as ours. Yeah, they flooded today. It's still, I think, maybe the second or third worst flood in the history of Trenton, New Jersey, which is a very old town.
I grew up in northern New Jersey, and I'm thinking, you know, I spent like the first 21 years of my life in New Jersey, and I'm just trying to think back. I don't remember Trenton being a flood risk. And has the rainfall just been increasing that much lately, or what do you think is the cause?
Well, the Delaware itself, you know, really, it never really flooded. Maybe slightly once in a blue moon where it didn't cause any damage. Up in between 1955 and 2004 with Hurricane Ivan. The problem is that in this region of the country, there's been such suburban sprawl that there's less land to absorb, you know, more houses, more blacktop, and less farmland to absorb the water. And
right.
There's been a lot of sprawl in New Jersey over the past 20 years and probably in Pennsylvania the past about 10. So needless to say, that could also lead to the increase. You know, there's less places for water to go. More people now have to open up the dams and send more water our way because there's more people living in the area. So if the land that normally wasn't inhabited would get flooded, now it would be damaged, and so they can't let it flood in. A friend of mine here actually did an interview with NBC that apparently is going to be used tomorrow on MSNBC as a tape feed because they're going to be covering the story all day, even though really the story is dying. They tape things the day before to air later, so she'll be appearing at some point, making that same point. So once again, the Head On Radio Network beats General Electric there with a spoof.
Well, I remember as a kid, we used to take an annual driving trip from Jersey to the Midwest to go and see all the family, and the first day's journey was just to get across Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, it was 10 straight hours to get from Bergen County across the line, the far line. But I remember Pennsylvania being really flat and really, really open. So in the past couple of decades, you have a lot more suburban development, so you have a lot more runoff and much less surface water retention going on.
Yeah, you must have been, I would say you would probably take an 80, but, well, then again, maybe... To us, it doesn't look as flat. What we think are mountains are mere foothills in other parts of this country. But.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once you get past that first ridge, though, and it was 80, right? And once you got once you got into the state, you know, it was pretty much fairly level, but a lot of it was rural and a lot of it was farmland. So taking that same route, would I see more development these days?
Oh, God, yeah. Farms... It's like farms are growing houses these days in this part of the country. You literally see farms with houses, McMansions popping up. You would think it's the number one agriculture in this country is suburban sprawl, the way it's being laid out in Pennsylvania. And in Pennsylvania, Republicans and Democrats came together on this issue, and many put a bill together to protect certain farmlands in the state so that they would never be redeveloped into sprawl because... There's an issue. It doesn't matter what your partisan is. You need to have rational thinking. So at least we have that to claim in Pennsylvania that Republicans and Democrats did come together to pass a bill, maybe too little too late. And certainly a lot of land still can be developed. But they at least had enough rationale to realize we don't want this state. You know, New Jersey really suffered, especially with overbuilding. There's still some rural parts in New Jersey, but they're very, very small. In that state any longer, and the real estate here is like California.
Oh man, well, it was getting insane when my family sold up in about 87, 88. I think the home that my parents bought for $28,000 back in 1960 spot something, they sold for like $750,000 in 87. And even at that time, though, if you went driving down the Garden State Parkway, once you got past about halfway, you hit the Garden State, where all the cranberry and strawberry farms were. Has that all, like, been decimated?
Yeah, well, especially parts of South Jersey, because the suburbs of Philly have really expanded into South Jersey. So South Jersey
right.
really sprawled out also. Matter of fact, my ex, her fiance, has a condo in Trenton, and he's paying just shy. The mortgage he bought it for just shy of $250,000, and it's not even that big of a condo. For a you know what I mean? It means he shares a wall with somebody. You would think that's cheap living, and he's $250,000 to live like that because he's in Trenton, New Jersey. So the price of real estate is ridiculous. And there's a lot of parts of Jersey where ranch houses are selling for over $200,000. I mean, you know, one-story homes. So,
that's insane. Yeah,
they're, and because of that, more of them are coming into Pennsylvania because here you can get a house just as even bigger for $100,000. And we've been built up like you can't even imagine, especially the Poconos. Ooh, there's not going to be any wood.
Well,
keep going.
Yeah, man, I haven't been to the Poconos since I was probably about 12.
You're not missing anything because I had to move out of the Poconos.
Because, you know, last time I was there, you know, it was, you know, still pretty much, you know, vacation homes and mountain roads. And, it was a great place. And it's really depressing to hear this about, you know, like that area where you are and where I came from, because for all the time that New Jersey was, you know, the armpit, the trash dump of the East Coast, you still could drive people down past Newark Airport and then go take them down to where the farms were and go, here's the Garden State, not the New York City-influenced area of New Jersey, but yeah. Here's the Garden State, what makes this place actually pretty cool.
Yeah. South Jersey is a nice area, much nicer than certain parts of North Jersey where the sky is yellow, or where Giant Stadium is in East Rutherford, where I saw Radiohead there, and at times I thought the toilets were all exploding at Giant Stadium.
Really?
Yeah, it smelled horrific at times during that concert. And it did all day down there. I don't know what goes on in East Rutherford, but it at times is just stomach turning. I don't know.
Well, how, I mean,
football fan.
It was a swamp.
Yeah,
it was a swamp.
Yeah, it smells bad there. Really, like a toilet. And I guess that would explain why the Jets have low attendance on top of the fact that they can't play football. Who wants to watch a bad football team where it smells like someone defecated gigantically?
Ah, man, what's happened in, you know, 20 years or whatever? This is just insane. And, you know, what's happened to you recently just goes to prove that, you know, the environmentalists weren't wrong when they said we have to think about our development better because of all these issues like surface water retention. And I'm imagining that a lot of this development around the rivers, you have a bunch of developments right on top of the rivers because people wanted waterfront properties and all that kind of stuff, which is going to end up being the worst place to lose all that surface retention.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And sometimes if you have waterfront property, it becomes water property, as we learned in this area more recently, some of the people who live very close to the river. So, yeah, it is a problem. And also, by the way, you were talking a little bit about, I'm a bit of a car guy, you were talking about the whole issue with hybrids. Absolutely right. People need to start thinking big vehicles. While they're doing hybrids, Toyota, I know, is trying to come out with a full-size pickup truck on hybrid.
That would be genius. That would be genius.
And it's a big truck too. They haven't got it to mass production level yet, but they keep going bigger and bigger. I know they got the Camry. They have a small SUV now that's a hybrid. So they're gradually in steps going bigger. They're really trying to get to the point where the big vehicles, maybe blue collar America needs, are also hybrids. And that's why Toyota is essentially becoming the number one car maker in the entire world. You know, where Ford's living in the Flintstone era of motor vehicles.
It's a joke, Spike.
Toyota's the Jetsons as opposed to Detroit with the Flintstones. I mean, the best way to put it.
I think you nailed it really well there. And I'm right up on top of a break because I got to come back and get something fit in before the top of the hour. But, Spike, I'm glad to hear that things aren't crashing down around you anymore. And keep us posted on what's happening over there with the weather and the water.
No problem. Well, I lost my train of thought there for a second with the hybrid issue because apparently the outlet in my wall just went out while I was talking to you.
Oh, no!
The walls aren't crashing, but the electric just went out.
Well, send me a link.
I will.
Okay, man. Thanks, Spike. All righty, that was Spike ringing in from Easton, Pennsylvania, and we're going to take a quick break and come back and we have a Peter, but not ours, on the line. So we may have to hold off on to the music interlude for a bit. But we're going to go out to a break here for just a couple of minutes. You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. You, too, can get on the program by dialing into 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And you're listening to Foxed Up. We'll be right back.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
In another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
If we do not take
all right, everybody, welcome back.
For saving animals from extinction, we allow a part of ourselves to die with them, because in the web of life, we are all connected.
You can rest assured.
Help World Wildlife Fund protect animals and the places where they live by ordering a free action kit. Together, we can leave our children a living planet.
She said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Clone Radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP. That's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on a Thursday night on the Head On Radio Network. And we're going to go straight back to the phones. I'm going to put off what I was going to do there for a moment. We have, I believe, a new caller. Peter, welcome to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy.
Hello, Cleveland!
That's our first time caller noise.
That's cool. I was digging the reverb.
What can we do for you tonight, sir?
I was just kind of follow-up response to the last caller. He was talking about, well, you know, hybrids. They're making them nice and big for the white people in the Midwest and all this. And, I mean, this is the problem, is, like, that people are over-consuming. You know, people live in these big houses, and they got big cars, and they burn up a lot of oil, and people consume too much. And I think we just accept the fact that Americans are pigs, and we do nothing about it. Now,
I agree. I absolutely agree with you there. And I think where we were talking about it is, you have a certain aspect of the population that is pushing manufacturers to make smaller, less abusive on the environment vehicles. But then there's this other aspect of the population that seems to be blind to the fact. So maybe they also need to come up with larger looking cars and trucks that are hybrid alternative fuels, in which to get these people off of the vehicles that they're on. I think that's where we were talking from, because of that stupidity that you speak of and that piggishness, that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you have a bunch of people ready to go on the diet and the rest of the sows need to kind of just be force-fed the diet food.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's these pigs that vote for Bush that are thinking like that and over-consuming and living in, you know, like rich folks living in 14,000 square foot houses. That's insane. Who needs to live in a house that's 14,000 square feet?
Exactly.
You could have hundreds of people in a space that big.
And last night I was even I was speaking about just the way that we construct, and this constantly building up, and the massive use of concrete, and the mining, manufacture, transport, mixing, and retransporting of concrete is just unbelievably wasteful, and it's like a really quiet fossil fuel burner. No one really pays attention to it. And like this goes into our living styles, the way we live our lives. You know, the idea of someone living in a house that size when it's probably just the two of them and all the kids are gone is ridiculous.
I mean, I think we need to reevaluate. You know, I'm a little bit pious right now, and which is a stupid place to be because it's laughable. But you know, I'm burning vegetable oil in my car.
Excellent.
And it was kind of a hassle. In fact, there's a big pool of vegetable oil in the passenger side. There's some kind of leak coming from the second.
Oh no!
I put in a grease car kit. You know, it's a company out in Massachusetts. And
yes, I've heard of them.
Actually, it was kind of cool. They sponsored the kit because we installed it at a community place. It was at the place called the Clearwater Festival, which is the Hudson Festival that cleaned up the Hudson River.
Ah.
Pete Seeger's festival. And so we did this as part of a public demonstration, and the mechanics lent their labor, and we did it there in the public, and like hundreds and hundreds of people came by, and they saw us filtering used oil from restaurants.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That really is fantastic. And just my producer is sending a message to me, to you, saying that Kitty Little will absorb that oil in your seat.
Well, it's interesting. She says it's not in the seat. It's in the, where it, you know, it's like on the floor there. And tell her.
But it'll soak it up.
Yeah, tell her thank you very much. And also, it's funny because we use kitty litter bottles. The plastic ones, we saw them in half, and you basically stick a T-shirt in there, and you can take the restaurant grease and filter out the major gunk out of it, and then put it in.
Oh, right.
So this
refit kit, what is, you put this in a what, a diesel vehicle you already had?
Yeah, I bought a diesel on Craigslist.
Excellent.
You know Craigslist?
I am vaguely familiar with it, but please let the listeners know.
Well, I'm sure the listeners know, both of them, that Craigslist. Hey, where are you? You're in Australia, right?
Yeah, I'm in Sydney, Australia. I can see the Harbour Bridge from my window.
That's
here.
That's nice. No, I wonder how many people are actually. I'm fascinated with you guys, by the way. I've never seen quite a setup like you guys have, where you've got all the trappings of a like an AM or FM radio station without having an antenna. I think it's really, really interesting. And I've been listening to quite a bit, actually. I live in a place where I can't get radio.
Oh, right.
But
I see this so much as almost like reliving the advent of terrestrial radio, the way internet radio is coming, because it's given the technology back to more the general public to allow them to broadcast. When, you know, the old operators, you know, a really good friend of mine here, you know, his first FM transmitter was one that he built when he was 14 years old. So I kind of think that it's a bit of a throwback to that it's just the fact that we finally have the technology at our disposal to be able to do this, and with some, you know, some, I have to say, admittedly clever thinking on some of our parts on how we've gotten this thing organized and the hard work of Ben Birch at White Rose.
By the way,
we're building.
I'm a huge fan of White Rose because
that's
how I get my daily dose of Mike Malloy.
Well, Mike is the dark prince of liberal progressive talk radio.
Liberal.
He calls himself a progressive, and I think that's probably the right terminology.
Yeah,
for
liberal kind of harkens back to laissez-faire or something. I don't know.
Well, see, it's how that word's been redefined over the years as well. You know, and I live in a country where liberal is the conservatives. Our right wing party is the liberals.
Right, right, right.
So I mean, that's really confusing. But I think they did that as just a trick to try and trick new immigrants on their first election, you know, before they've had a chance to really get familiar with how the system works. Go, oh, I'll just vote for the liberal candidate. And I really, really, I have nothing to base it on, but I really think that must have been the reason for the decision and the name. Because there can be no other. There's nothing liberal about these people except for tax cuts and helping out their rich mates. Because I can tell you, like Spike was mentioning, our last caller, he was talking about the fact that he could just see the haze, the yellow haze over the Meadowlands now, and that's what I've seen develop up over Sydney. From the same view over the past 3 years, it's gone from.
Actually, it's funny because I drive through the Meadowlands a lot. I commute between the mountains and Chinatown, New York City.
Oh, right.
And I'm actually always pleasantly surprised at the amount of like thriving functional wetlands that I see in there.
Well, it seems like he was saying though that you know around the Meadowlands it's gotten fairly dirty again. But I need to wrap this up because we're up on top of the news, and I really appreciate you calling in.
Right, one quick thing, we can say things like shit on this because it's not.
No. We're trying to get on terrestrial radio, and we are running a delay, so that will probably have just been cut off.
Okay, I've heard cuss words on here. My apologies.
No, that's all right. We were running loose. And we had a couple of infringements, so we installed the delay. But I really thank you for calling in, Peter. We're right up against it. This is Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going straight into the news. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. The stock market rallied today with the biggest one-day gains for the Dow and NASDAQ in more than 3 years. We'll have the closing numbers at the end of the newscast. The Supreme Court ruled today that holding military trials for detainees at Guantanamo Bay Prison violates both U.S. and international law, but the decision did not mention closing the prison, which President Bush has said he would like to do once a suitable place for the prisoners can be found. Responding to the ruling, Bush administration officials say the decision will not affect how the prison is run. President Bush says despite the ruling, he'll search for a way to move forward with the trials. In Gaza, Israeli warplanes set a fire at the Palestinian Interior Ministry office, where Israelis believe terrorist activity is planned and directed. The strike was launched just after 1 o'clock Friday morning when the building was deserted. No injuries were reported. That strike came soon after reports that Israel was halting its advance into northern Gaza. Palestinian militants have reportedly offered a conditional release of an Israeli soldier whose abduction prompted Israel to attack. However, Israel denies receiving the offer. In Washington, the FBI has evaluated a laptop computer that was stolen 2 months ago. It contained personal information on more than 26 million veterans and family members, but officials say none of it was accessed. The laptop was recovered after an informant tipped off authorities to its whereabouts. In Russia, foreign ministers from eight nations are meeting in Moscow. They say they expect a response from Iran about a package of incentives aimed at halting the country's nuclear program by next week. But one official said it may not be a simple yes or no answer. Earlier, Iran's foreign minister said a response would not be ready until late August. On Capitol Hill, the House has voted to allow drilling in the Gulf of Mexico and other U.S. coastal areas. That would end a 25-year ban on drilling, but two senators from Florida have vowed to defeat the bill. In Alabama, former Governor Don Siegelman was found guilty today of trading favors for campaign funds. The case was tried as he was running for the Democratic nomination for governor, which he subsequently lost. In Pennsylvania, an evacuation order for tens of thousands of residents of Wilkes Barre has been lifted. But thousands of others living along the Delaware River have now evacuated as rivers continue to rise. 16 deaths throughout the East are now being blamed on flooding. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Federal Reserve raised interest rates today up a quarter point to 5.25%. That's a 17th straight hike. The Commerce Department reports that the U.S. economy grew at 5.6% rate in the first quarter. The gross domestic product was aided by improvement in the U.S. trade deficit. The SEC and Justice Department are investigating more than 50 companies for stock option fraud. The probe aims to find out whether the stock values were manipulated for the financial benefit of top executives. Freddie Mac reports that mortgage rates rose for the third week in a row. The nationwide average for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is now 6.78%. Ford Motor says it will not produce 250,000 hybrid vehicles by 2010, as previously promised. The company says it instead wants to focus on vehicles that run on alternative fuels. Verizon Wireless has announced that the penalty customers pay for breaking their cell phone contracts is being reduced. Starting in the fall, the fee will be based on how much time remains on their current contract. The $5 bill is being redesigned. The design changes have not been announced, but it will still feature President Lincoln's face. The New York Times reports that the average price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is now $2.87. Light sweet crude settled at $73.52 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 217 points, NASDAQ up 62, S&P 500 up 27. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever.
We'll be right back.
Call the show at 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. Brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And now, back to John on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, 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 hey. Welcome back to Foxed Up here on a Thursday night. Kicking into hour two. Where should we go? Where should we go? Well, we had a couple of really good calls there in the end. Great to hear from Spike and realize that he was not washed away in the great flood of eastern Pennsylvania. And Peter ringing up and taking a little bit of task about, you know, I mean, we were kind of joking about the idea of the hybrid caddy. And he is right that, you know, as far as energy, Americans are pigs. There's, you know, there's no other way to describe it. We are pigs. And just to kind of show you the pigs we are, you can find this at 12thharmonic.net. It's one of the most recent stories, and it comes out of Common Dreams. U.S. emits half of car-caused greenhouse gas, study says. I kind of touched on this a little bit last night, but I didn't actually get into reading the article, so we will do that now. It says, Americans drive more in vehicles with lower fuel standards, say an environmental group. This will end up being a focus group by the Bush administration's terms. But anyway, American cars and pickup trucks are responsible for nearly half of the greenhouse gases emitted by automobiles globally, even though the nation's vehicles make up only 30% of the nearly 700 million cars in use, according to a new report by Environmental Defense. Cars in the U.S. are driven more miles, face lower economy standards, and use fuel with more carbon than many of those driven in other countries. The authors found, according to the report by environmental group Duet Today, U.S. cars and light trucks were driven 2.6 trillion miles in 2004, equal to driving back and forth to Pluto more than 470 times. The report's authors hope the findings will bolster efforts in Congress to require federal regulations to raise fuel economy standards for vehicles and set mandatory cap on greenhouse gases from all sources. Numerous studies have linked carbon dioxide emissions from burning of fossil fuels such as gasoline to global warming. One surprising finding was that small cars emitted more carbon dioxide than SUVs, 25% of the total compared with 21%. That is because there are more older small vehicles with higher emissions still in service, said the lead author John DeSisco, a mechanical engineer specializing in automobile research. Even though the SUVs get worse fuel economy and burn more gas, there's roughly twice as many small cars in operation, he said. So this is where it has to come from all angles. You know, we have too many cars. This is the other thing. You know, I mean, when my siblings and I were growing up, you know, it was all that kind of thing. Every kid had to, you know, you had to have your own car. And, you know, it was kind of like a rite of passage thing, but it really, really was short-sighted. You know, halfway through laziness and fear and insurance rates by our parents. And, you know, and the other thing, too, is, aside from just the waste factor, I also reckon that just got us accustomed to being locked into insurance, car payment, all these massive expenses really, really early. So it's a cultural thing, which we have to get over. I mean, we really do. You know, I've heard similar arguments in Australia when it comes to you know, things about, because Australia is per capita the worst polluter. But we have a really small population, so in comparison to the damage the United States does, it's small. However, when I have these kind of discussions with people here, they say, oh, you know, Australia's a big country, we got to drive farther, and all this other, and it's all excuses. It's all excuses because everyone is lazy when it comes to this stuff. And I don't want to come off, well, I will come off as being preachy and holier than thou. Because I don't know how else it's going to come off, but partially out of choice. Not partially, very much out of choice. I don't even own a car. And that choice being one, I personally cannot justify the ridiculous expense that it takes to keep a car on the road here in New South Wales. I have a little two-wheeled trolley that I take to go and walk and do my grocery shopping from my local grocer and my local greengrocer and my local butcher. Because I can do the math and know that, one, more of the money that I'm spending is staying in the local community because it's not going to some big multinational. You know, I was a vegetarian for many, many years. I'm no longer. But I buy from my local butcher because even though they might not have things that are, say, things like certified organic everywhere, I happen to know from talking to these guys that they know the farms that they get their beef from. And I know where it's coming from. And it's coming from a New South Wales, you know, cattle farm, ranch. And, you know, it's not that way everywhere, Agnes, I hate to say. Just so happens that, you know, here, in, just to use Australia as an example, we have, I think it is 4 grocery store chains. None of them are Australian-owned. I think that just in any nation, that's wrong. How the economy, which is your food, can be being funneled straight off like that. Why you wouldn't be pushing to make sure that you have some domestic ownership. But the South African-owned Franklin's runs more like a franchise situation. So the stores are kind of locally owned, blah, blah, blah. But it does give the managers a little bit more control over things. And so I go and talk to my local store manager and talk to him about the content of food. And from our discussions, he started stocking things like non-homogenized organic full cream milk. And guess what? It's selling. I'm not the only one buying it. And when I get that, it's coming from a New South Wales dairy. It's not coming from Woolworths that has been bought really, really cheap out of a collective, possibly anywhere in Australia or in, you know, Southeast Asia. And as my producer says, people don't want synthetic food. All you have to do is look at what happened with genetically modified food in the UK. It had to be labeled, and the people didn't buy it. So all the grocery stores just stopped stocking it. So what do they do here in Australia? They've made it illegal for you to mark that something is genetically modified. You're not allowed to tell people. Not on the packaging. Just about coming up on a break, and when we come back, I'm going to get into a little bit of music. Just because that's something that I like to do. Anyway, we're going to come back, and I'm going to play you something very, very, very unique. And if there's any Doors fans out there, we are going to conjure the spirit of Jim Morrison after we come back. You're listening to Foxed Up for Thursday night on the Head On Radio Network, coming to you from Sydney. You can get in on the program after the next segment at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, and we'll be right back.
Power!
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment, or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Here on Thursday night, wrapping up the broadcast day here on the Head On Radio Network, but we got a lot yet to go. For the moment, though, we're going to have a little bit of a musical interlude. And the reason that I'm doing this, here I'm going to be going and plugging a guy who hasn't put a record out since 2001. But there's a reason for this. You know, some say, you know, success is practice, practice, practice. Other people say it's timing, timing, timing. Well, sometimes you can have the worst timing in the world, and it can be completely out of your power. Back in the late 90s, a young band came out by the name of Days of the New, and they kind of shook up the guitar playing world quite a bit, because they were basically a stock, you know, Alice in Chains influenced heavy metal band, and the singer went off and started doing some acoustic coffee house gigs. And the material he was writing suddenly wasn't fitting to the big guitar feel. So one day the band rocked up and he said, "We're going acoustic." Unplugged everything. And they put out a really, really unique, somewhat minorly juvenile, the first album. I can't say that, though. They were, like, 17. And they won, like, Best New Artist, Best New Guitarist Awards for a couple of years. Put out a second record with Travis Meeks, the lead singer, filling in with basically a new band, a Celtic choir, half an orchestra. And then the third album came out a week after the 9/11 attacks. What a way to have your career come to a dead end. Now, as far as I understand, this guy's without a deal now. And you can find him, and you can find the video clip of this, of what we're going to play here, on his website, which is Travis Meeks, MEEKS.com. And this is from a Doors performance. And I'm still trying to find a place to get the DVD of this myself. And it's the remaining members of the Doors with a couple of extra musicians. I got a tabla player and a fretless bass player. And they had a whole bunch of different singers, you know, a guy from Stone Temple Pilots, blah, 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 all come in and do a song each. I guess it was a tribute to Jim. Well, they closed out the night with the young Travis Meeks doing The End. Now, anyone out there who is a Doors fan would know that this is not a song to be taken lightly, especially if you're going out there to try and tribute the man. So we're going to play this. It's a live take of Travis Meeks from Days of the New with the remaining Doors. This is only like in the last year or so or something. And you'll hear Manzarek introduce him, and you'll hear he's a little bit held back in the beginning. But then there's a moment where suddenly he channels the spirit of Jim, and it's almost spooky. So kick back, and if you like what you hear, go to your local record shop and pick up any of the three Days of the New album. Any of them. 1, 2, and 3. 2 would be my choice. Very orchestral. It's gorgeous. And if you like guys that sing like guys, you'll really like this guy. So, Agnes, hit it. Travis Meeks with the Doors.
And to sing it, a young singer who I think has a lot of courage, because this is a dark song, and he does it fearlessly. From Days of the New, Travis Meeks.
Surprise, the end. cares long. 7 miles, ride the snake. He's old, and his skin is cold. Stop! Stop the car. I'm getting out. I can't take it. There's somebody coming, and there's nothing you can do about it. The killer awoke before dawn. He put his boots on. He took a face from the ancient gallery. And he walked on down the hallway, baby. To the room where his sister lived in Van Heed. Paid a little visit to his brother, and then he. And he walked on down the hall. And he came to a door. He looked inside. Father, yes, son, I want to kill you. Mother, I want to. You'll never follow me.
winter and soft light. Yeah. The end of nights we try to die. This is the end.
And if you go by Travis Meek's website, travismeeks.com, you can see the video of that performance. And at the end, I think the Doors themselves felt Jim in the room. I do not... I've been a big fan of this young guy for a long time now. And I hadn't gone hunting for him in a while, and I realized that the old Days of the News site now redirects to just his Travis Meek site, and he's got a bootleg solo CD out and whatnot. And I have a feeling with the timing of this his last album's release, and I think they were expecting big things out of it. I bet that this guy has. I bet he's got a bill from the record company a mile long, and I bet he's killing himself to pay it off. If I know anything about this industry in which I worked for many, many a year, but just how amazing! I mean, absolutely capturing somebody that to that point. I mean, I really think you could probably play that blind to a few people, and will wonder where you got that live recording of the Doors. But you'll hear a little bit more from Travis Meeks and Days of the New here on this show. And in fact, I've asked Agnes to get a bumper off the new record queued up for me. This is a tune called Fighting with Clay that we'll go out with here in a minute. And that's off of the album that came out like a week after the 9/11 attacks. I mean, I'm telling you, you know, you couldn't ask for worse luck, especially when you're maybe somewhat slightly out of the mainstream the way he was. Like if you pick up the first two and just hear the growth that happened from what was four teenage kids to then a guy who went and bought an old distillery in his hometown in Kentucky and turned it into a recording studio so he could, you know, really hammer out his grandiose ideas, and some of them are just superb. You know, there's an unnamed instrumental piece on the second record that is just I've had people stop in large venues because I've played it as housewarming, and it's got these beautiful tubular bells, and I could not tell you for my life or for the life of me whether those are real or they're sampled. But anyway, we're gonna go out, take a little bit of a break because we went burning way over the bottom of the hour. And so you're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. Please ring in and get in on the show, because at the top of the next hour we have Anthony Lowenstein going to be on the phone to talk about Israel-Palestine. And you're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network, and this is off of Days of the New 3, Fighting with Clay.
Nobody knows you. You keep on fighting.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerbee. Did you know that every 3 minutes another woman gets the news she has breast cancer? I got it 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-NU, oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options, and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. The first place to go the minute you find you have breast cancer, breastcancer.org.
In Kosovo, the U.S. government has provided over $292 million, a $70 million U.S. government assistance package for Central America in response to Hurricane Mitch.
Sometimes it seems like we spend an awful lot of our tax money helping people in other countries. But in reality, it's less than 1% of our government's annual budget. Our aid programs save lives by helping couples plan their families, immunizing children against deadly diseases, and ensuring that people have safe drinking water. It's important that these programs continue. Helping create a healthy and secure future for people in developing countries helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
After the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works, and other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
That is a band called The Last. Very interesting. I really like that opener. Hell of a doof-doof kick drum coming in there, though. But wow, that was really cool. Hey, you never know what you're going to get here on Foxed Up. One thing you'll always get is some fresh music, some stuff you probably never heard before. That really felt good to do that for young Mr. Meeks. I sent him an email off this morning hoping that maybe we can possibly even get him on the line one day and actually find out what's going on with him, because in a time of lackluster music, I think need to take every opportunity to put forth what is good. Coming up a little bit later in the program, after we do the news a little bit later on, we're going to have, we have planned to have Anthony Lowenstein on from AnthonyLowenstein.com. You can find a link on my show post at headonradionetwork.com. And we're going to talk about some of the things that we heard yesterday about Israel and Palestine. Ben had rung up yesterday saying that there had been a possible chemical attack into Israel. As of yet, 24 hours later, Antony had had no confirmation of that, not even in the Israeli press. So he figures if it had happened, we would be seeing it there, and he's got his finger right on the pulse. But Antony had, and I have a feeling he'll even mention this when he's on. He had linked on his blog today an editorial piece from The Australian from today, and. here come the emails. The whole Israel-Palestine thing is evil hot topic numero uno to discuss openly. But anyway, here it says, Palestinian terrorist attacks can no longer be tolerated. And who's the author of this? Oh, I guess this is just the editor's main one. Anyway, it says here, yet again, it is ordinary Palestinians who will be the biggest losers in the latest outrage by terrorists in the Gaza Strip. Israel's military strike at the heart of Gaza following the kidnapping of 19-year-old Corporal Gilad Shalit is exactly right. Even more so with yesterday's news that Palestinian terrorists killed a young Jewish settler seized from the West Bank at the weekend. In June last year, Ehud Olmert, then Israel's deputy prime minister, declared the Jewish state was tired of fighting and wanted a new partnership with its difficult neighbor. The election of the terrorist organization Hamas to replace Fatah and the Palestinian Authority helm pulled the rug from under its works. Okay, here's where I have my first problem. You're not allowed to have influence in who someone else elects as their leadership. Hello. Again, we get around to that whole concept of democracy, 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 and we don't like who you elect, we just ignore them, or we belittle them, or we just disregard them completely. Wonder why the Palestinians might be just a little bit into poking the beast. You know, I mean, both sides are so guilty of missteps and mismanagement and sheer stupidity at times. But how can you have negotiations when you won't even honor, won't even legitimately look at or respectively consider as existing the leadership that those people have elected for themselves? We have no place telling the Palestinians that they cannot have Hamas as their government. If that's who they voted for, that's who they voted for. You know, I spoke with Antony not all that long ago, and he said, you know, nobody really cared for Arafat, but he was kind of getting the job done. But when Arafat stopped getting the job done, on the ground for the people, as in food and shelter, Hamas started to. So, of course, the people are going to back those that are actually making some sort of difference for them on the ground. I mean, this is only simple logic. But, as usual, the press only seems to look at one side of it, you know. And this is where a couple of weeks ago I mentioned an editorial that Antony had printed in the same The Australian, because they've always been very much not to look at the other side of the story. And so for Antony's piece to be printed in full with no editing, and in fact them requesting more, he thought might have been shining some light on a possible change in direction. Well, you read this, and I guess not all that much has changed. So, I'll be interested to see if what else he might have to add to the discussion, because I do not claim to be an expert in any way. The only thing I claim is that, you know, people should be allowed to elect the governments that they wish. I think they should be allowed to live their lives. And, you know, someone posed an interesting question to me the other day. Would Israel have been having this much trouble if they had chosen one of the other possible locations? Just curious. I mean, would we be dealing with this in, you know, in South America? If, you know, wasn't that one of the other possible locations for the displaced Jews, rah, 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 where they were possibly one of the options? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, come back and wrap up this hour and get all set up to get Anthony on the line. You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. You can email me, john@fourthestateradio.com. We're chatting at headonradionetwork.com. And we'll see you on the other side of this. We'll be right back.
Because I had many nightmares, but the fatal day, the room was dark and the skeleton was floating on the wall. My voice trembles down inside me. I'm trapped.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
Oh, it's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Think carefully. Do you remember what you had for breakfast this morning? Do you remember where you're supposed to be this afternoon? Do you remember the first question? Our children, your child, may not. Because every day the chances of becoming a victim of mercury poisoning increase. Mercury poisoning may cause neurological damage that impairs learning, language development, vision, and memory. And mercury itself has become part of our everyday lives, absorbed by certain fish, taken into our bodies, and passed on to our children like a common cold. But you can stop this. Log on to earthshare.org and find out how. Will you remember that? A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
everybody. And yes, that is David Bowie, not Nillawafer or whatever the hell his name was. Welcome back to Foxed Up here. We got a couple of minutes to wrap up this hour before we hit the news and come back with Anthony Lowenstein, blogger, journalist, and author, with his new book, My Israel Question, coming out in the coming weeks. And the waters are already stirred over this book. Give you a little bit of the background. For those of you who have not heard me speak of Anthony before, he's a young Jewish Australian who thinks the Palestinians have as much of a right to, you know, life, liberty, security, and happiness as the Israelis do. And if you follow these things at all, you know that if you're Jewish and don't support the Zionist-type dogma, even though you may not be anti-Zionist at all, you will be labeled as anti-Semitic. And I can tell you from close experience that the hate that gets spewed at this young man who just seems to see very, very clearly through the fog just blows me away. But this should be very, very interesting when we come back. We'll have Anthony on. And check out his blog. There's a link to it on my show post. Now, only got a couple of minutes to fill here, so can't really get into anything too severe. But, you know, it's been a big week here on the Old Horn. We've had a doing this test run of this show, which will come to a temporary end as of Friday. But I do believe I will be back. And Mark Levine starts off kicking things off a whole hour earlier for us every day during the week now, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And I had to listen to his program in archive last night. And I tell you, I think it's very, very cool that our newest edition is from D.C. When most of what we do is politics and whatnot, we've got somebody actually there. And very interesting to become more familiar with Mark Levine myself, because I know that some of you out there knew him before he joined the family. So I've had a conversation with him. Seems like a very kind of energetic, positive kind of guy that wants to be part of something different, unique, and real, like this little project that is not a little project anymore. Suddenly realizing that, you know, we've got 11 hours of program daily, live, every day. That's something else. And we're going to get that whole Sunday archive stream sorted out for this weekend, so we're not leaving you all in the dark on the weekends. But we're just about to be coming up on the news. Straight after the break, we're going to have Anthony Lowenstein on the line talking about stuff in the Middle East. I think I have a couple of other little environmental story tidbits to go to. And do not forget, if you haven't been there yet, WhiteRoseSociety.org. They're having their fundraiser at the moment. Please stop by. Drop a dime, drop a dollar, drop a 10, drop a 50, drop a 100, whatever you can do. You know, whatever you throw down for your weekly meal out, skip it this week. Toss it Ben's way, because you're listening to this. He's doing the right thing so we can get over. You do the right thing so we can continue to get over. So we're going to go out to the top of the hour, get Anthony on the phone when we come back. We got a bit of news from QualityNewsNetwork.com. You're with Foxed Up on a Thursday night. Might even be Friday morning for you coming up very, very soon. We'll see you straight after the news.
Down with both your feet on This is the Quality News Network. The stock market rallied today with the biggest one-day gains for the Dow and NASDAQ in more than 3 years. We'll have the closing numbers at the end of the newscast. The Supreme Court ruled today that holding military trials for detainees at Guantanamo Bay Prison violates both U.S. and international law. But the decision did not mention closing the prison, which President Bush has said he would like to do once a suitable place for the prisoners can be found. Responding to the ruling, Bush administration officials say the decision will not affect how the prison is run. President Bush says despite the ruling, he'll search for a way to move forward with the trials. In Gaza, Israeli warplanes set a fire at the Palestinian Interior Ministry office, where Israelis believe terrorist activity is planned and directed. The strike was launched just after 1 o'clock Friday morning when the building was deserted. No injuries were reported. That strike came soon after reports that Israel was halting its advance into northern Gaza. Palestinian militants have reportedly offered a conditional release of an Israeli soldier whose abduction prompted Israel to attack. However, Israel denies receiving the offer. In Washington, the FBI has evaluated a laptop computer that was stolen 2 months ago. It contained personal information on more than 26 million veterans and family members, but officials say none of it was accessed. The laptop was recovered after an informant tipped off authorities to its whereabouts. In Russia, foreign ministers from 8 nations are meeting in Moscow. They say they expect a response from Iran about a package of incentives aimed at halting the country's nuclear program by next week. But one official said it may not be a simple yes or no answer. Earlier, Iran's foreign minister said a response would not be ready until late August. On Capitol Hill, the House has voted to allow drilling in the Gulf of Mexico and other U.S. coastal areas. That would end a 25-year ban on drilling, but 2 senators from Florida have vowed to defeat the bill. In Alabama, former Governor Don Siegelman was found guilty today of trading favors for campaign funds. The case was tried as he was running for the Democratic nomination for governor, which he subsequently lost. In Pennsylvania, an evacuation order for tens of thousands of residents of Wilkes Barre has been lifted. But thousands of others living along the Delaware River have now evacuated as rivers continue to rise. 16 deaths throughout the East are now being blamed on flooding. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Federal Reserve raised interest rates today up a quarter point to 5.25%. That's a 17th straight hike. The Commerce Department reports that the U.S. economy grew at 5.6% rate in the first quarter. The gross domestic product was aided by improvement in the U.S. trade deficit. The SEC and Justice Department are investigating more than 50 companies for stock option fraud. The probe aims to find out whether the stock values were manipulated for the financial benefit of top executives. Freddie Mac reports that mortgage rates rose for the third week in a row. The nationwide average for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is now 6.78%. Ford Motor says it will not produce 250,000 hybrid vehicles by 2010, as previously promised. The company says it instead wants to focus on vehicles that run on alternative fuels. Verizon Wireless has announced that penalty customers pay for breaking their cell phone contracts is being reduced. Starting in the fall, the fee will be based on how much time remains on their current contract. The $5 bill is being redesigned. The design changes have not been announced, but it will still feature President Lincoln's face. The New York Times reports that the average price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is now $2.87. Light sweet crude settled at $73.52 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 217 points, NASDAQ up 62, S&P 500 up 27. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Does this mean the popularity of the group is waning?
Oh, no, not at all. I just think that that their appeal is becoming more selective.
Your third hour of All Foxed Up with John Fox. You can reach the show at 877-443-2366. Let's get back to John on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Hour 3 of Foxed Up for a Friday night, or Thursday night, Friday morning. We're going to be getting Anthony Lowenstein here on the phone in a very short few minutes. But first, what are we going to do? I have to go looking. Sorry, folks. We just ran into a minor delay in getting Anthony on the line, so we're sorting that out. Where was I going to go? Boy, that threw me. I slacked off because I thought I had a guest ready to get on the line, but that's all good. I did have something. And I'm going to do one quick story, then we're going to take a break and get Anthony on the line. Let's see, where was that thing? And it'll be here. We've got one of our really, really good friends who sends us tons and tons and tons of links. On the environmental angle of things, just to let you know that Chevron funded Schwarzenegger has sold out the environment, is the headline at Think Progress. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Republican, repeatedly touts the environment as his top priority. He even changed his official campaign color to green. Yet Schwarzenegger recently announced his opposition to Clean Alternative Energy Initiative, a landmark ballot measure that would finance alternative energy research and development by imposing a tax on oil companies. The initiative is backed by dozens of California green groups and would boost the state's economy, according to the UC Berkeley's Goldman School for Public Policy. Okay. Thank you, Arnie. You really should have stayed making bad films. You did a lot less damage then. Okay, Agnes, I'll tell you what. Why don't we go ahead and take a quick break? We'll get Anthony on the line and come straight back instead of me hunting around and finding stuff. So we're going to go right out to a break real quick, folks. We'll be straight back and have Anthony Lowenstein on the line talking to us about what is going on between Israel and Palestine at the moment and see if maybe we can get some clarity here. So we'll get a little music happening, and we're going to go out to break here a little early, come back with Anthony Lowenstein here on the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to Foxed Up. We'll be right back.
I remember no was a lonesome whistle blow and a young dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I found. Change my mind, but mama tried. One and only rebel child.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm a new mother, and my baby and I are healthy. But every minute, a woman dies in pregnancy or childbirth. I'm proud that our government supports programs that help mothers and their families around the world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support U.S. assistance for voluntary family planning programs worldwide. That's 202-224-3121.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't. Ha, 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
Take you down.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Seems as though we're having a bit of an international line issue, and just when we're trying to get Ant on the line, we can't get a connection. So we'll just have to try and get him rescheduled for tomorrow. You know, these things happen, and for once it actually wasn't our network. It was the phone. Anyway, what are you going to do? So before we went off and tried to salvage the interview, which we will get for tomorrow, we'll get it sorted, they're talking about Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger how he just, you know, seems to be being a good little Republican and not giving a damn about the environment, don't even care whether or not the people actually support it, don't care, you know, they don't care about their local economies, really. This just proves they're only out to line their own pockets. Because even, you know, California research, university research, made it clear that it would be good for the economy. So maybe it's not good for the right person's economy. What do you reckon? Anyway, so there was a link off the the progress report there, talking about Schwarzenegger's big oil money. And it says, no sooner did Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger call for a state investigation of price gouging at the pump than his critics jumped in feet first, noting that no special interest money governor has taken nearly, he said no special interest money for him, right? Nearly $2 million in campaign contributions from the very oil companies he wants investigated. Bet that investigation would have teeth, huh? Not. I mean, it just makes you sick. You know, and I mean, how, sorry, California, I did live there, but I mean, how California to elect another actor? Didn't you learn the first time? Especially not a Republican actor. He wasn't even a good actor. Maybe some people thought he'd be better at politics than acting. But, and this, again, is why I say that we have to get all this money out of the politics. You know, publicly funded elections. And no Perot things where you say, I'll just pay for my own. You know, it's... How do you expect the people that are supposed to oversee and protect the people to oversee and protect the people when they're being paid for by the very entities that they're supposed to be protecting the people from? You know, this is... I'm sorry, it's basic logic, isn't it? And, you know, things like the Honda story from earlier, you know, is the exception as opposed to the rule when it comes to modern industry. My mate Gene is on line one. Gene, welcome to Foxed Up. Gene.
Yeah.
Hey, man, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Unfortunately, well, we didn't get Ant on tonight, but we'll get him on tomorrow.
Oh, I'm sure. But I was going to talk to you about a couple other things real quick.
Please do.
Yeah. That thing about the Arnie and the California thing. One of the things I didn't mention, because I'm not really quite sure on my facts, but it doesn't just affect California and Chevron. Our Governor Kulongoski he's really pushed to get the California Clean Air Standards put into Oregon. Because if he can do it in Oregon, Washington State says that they'll go ahead and do it. They'll have a nice clean air corridor. So right. I'm just wondering if the reason that Arnie has come out against this stuff is Chevron is saying, now just a second here. We're not going to be to have, you know, regular cars for three whole states. What are you doing?
Well, you know, sometimes it's just a little bit, you know, tough luck Charlie at this point is my honest opinion. I'm tired, you know, I've been hearing almost my entire existence on this planet, you know, manufacturers saying that it's not viable yet.
Oh yeah, I know. Oh, I get so sick of it. It just drives me nuts. It's like I saw something, GM had made an absolutely blood-free car. And I call it blood-free because it's no oil, nothing. It's runs off of seawater. You think we're going to be...
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't send that on, but it was last week.
Oh, is that the thing where they're able to use the salt content to create electrostatic charges?
I don't know.
I think I heard something about this technology a couple of years ago. I'm wondering if that's what it is, because I heard something about salt water in a contained cylinder with a couple of electrodes. I wonder if that's what it is.
It might be. It was a video that I saw. And they didn't really cover. They didn't really cover the seawater angle very much. It was more like a high tech deal, because you know you could take the car body off and put on a pickup truck body or something like that. It was really kind of neat. But, of course, this is a concept car. So,
Well, you got to start with a concept, man. You know, I mean, it all starts with a concept.
Oh yeah, but if they can build the concept, and I'm sure you can't get everything in there. I mean, they'll probably put the pedals back in. This one didn't have foot pedals, but you know, but
was it more like a motorcycle type of an arrangement?
No, it was kind of like a van. It was actually like a little minivan, but it had drive-by wire driving. It didn't have a connect. There was no crankshaft. It wasn't physical. The body wasn't physically connected to the chassis. That's why you could do this. The other neat thing about it is you could go from the left. You can actually had a universal steering wheel that you could go from the left side of the car to the right, so you didn't have to, you know, change things out. It was cool. But
well, you were talking about, you know, Oregon was looking to basically, you know, follow suit. If it worked in California, they would have picked it up. Now, I remember back many moons ago when I spent some time working for an actual paint manufacturer,
mm-hmm.
when volatile organic compound labeling first came in,
mm-hmm.
Which I believe that even the Bush administration ended up having the mandatory markings removed after they've been on for like over a decade. But this and what was interesting is I worked for a very, very – oh, right on. We have Anthony on the phone, so we'll wrap but we'll finish this up first. Anyway, what I was going to say is this: I worked for a small paint manufacturer, a small homegrown company,
mm-hmm.
and they had worked on their own as much as they could in their technology to try and make their chemical products as environmentally friendly as possible,
mm-hmm.
as far as as much drying agents, all these kind of things, right?
Mm, yeah.
And so for a couple of years, the industry had to throw a lot of money into testing to actually get the scale set up for these volatile organic compounds.
Mm-hmm.
But all the research that was done into getting that labeling done gave all these small manufacturers and all the bigger manufacturers even more ammunition for them to continue to improve their products, mm-hmm. because the drying agents and whatnot in coatings is a major factor, especially in closed areas and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so the labeling ended up helping spurn the direction that the industry was trying to go at the time.
Oh.
And California at that time led the country on every environmental statute.
Yeah.
Because it was the worst there, and the idea was if we can clean it up there, we can clean it up everywhere else. Has California fallen that far behind now?
I haven't been there in quite a while, but I can – it is kind of dropping. There's something going on along the border. But I'll talk to you about that with the water deal. But I'll talk to you about that later. You got your other guests, so I'll call.
Thank you, Gene. I really appreciate your call, and I will talk to you maybe even tomorrow night.
Okay.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Bye.
All right. And that was Gene, who we always love to hear from. And I'm telling you, I get so much stuff from that guy. He's just of more value than you can imagine. But on the line, better late than never, we have Mr. Anthony Lowenstein from Sydney, Australia, journalist, author, with a new book coming out in a few short weeks called My Israel Question. Welcome to the show, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. We speak often, but not usually through this long of a connection. But
so true, so true. No, it's kind of strange because it's going to the U.S., but it sounds clear as a bell.
Right on. Well, I rang you right after my show yesterday, saying, you know, Ben came calling into the show about this supposed chemical attack by the Palestinians into Israel, but you've found no confirmation of that as yet. Is that right?
I haven't really. I mean, I think it's obviously impossible to say it didn't happen, but I think it's highly unlikely, because if it did happen, the Israeli press would have been all over it, and I've seen nothing in the Israeli press apart from a few sort of comments here and there about allegations. So I'm not going to say it's not true, but I think it's unlikely that it is true, put it that way.
Okay. Well, over the last, week or so, maybe a little bit more, things have been heating up in the area with the Israelis sending tanks over at one point and some not indiscriminate bombings, but actually targeting infrastructure in Palestine.
Uh-huh.
And they've, but it seems to be that, to me, at least so far in the press, it all seems to be the bad, 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 bad Palestinians, when all I've basically seen has been Israel going and taking people from leadership positions in the Palestinian government and taking them captive. Can you clarify what exactly has set this thing in motion and gotten it so hot?
Well, the reason why it initially started, I mean, it's always difficult to actually know what really started it, but late last week, a number of Palestinian militants launched a military attack against an Israeli army post, which I think it's important to clarify this, that so much of the Western media frequently talks about these acts being terrorist acts. The fact is they're not terrorist acts. Just like in the Iraq, for example, if there are attacks against American soldiers, not suggesting the American soldiers are not do not suffer because of that. That's not a terrorist act. It's a legitimate form of resistance against an occupation. It's an important, you know, accepted within international law. So, firstly, when a soldier, last week there were a few Palestinians who killed a number of Israeli soldiers. I took one guy captive, a 19-year-old Israeli soldier captive. This guy is now, it's hard to know where he is, probably in Gaza somewhere, being held captive. The Israeli response to that, as is always the case, has been completely disproportionate to the supposed crime that was committed. They have now decided to reinvade parts of Gaza. Of course, you may recall last year Israel pulled out of Gaza, physically pulled out of Gaza, but of course the reality has been the occupation itself is still existing in so many ways because the borders are completely controlled by Israel. And Israel has now decided to conduct a number of bombing raids on Gaza. I just looked before I came on with you, and they have now bombed a number of Palestinian buildings, authority buildings in Gaza City. They're also likely to, they've rounded up dozens of Palestinian MPs. The thing I find extraordinary about that is, can you imagine for a second if the Palestinian Authority or Hamas decided to keep hostage, which essentially is what it is, a number of Israeli MPs? There would be an international outcry. I have not read anywhere, apart from very muted criticism, any discussion about holding democratically elected leadership hostage for what is essentially a way in which to bargain. You know, it's essentially a bargaining chip to get this Israeli soldier back. It seems quite clear.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, almost as bad as being being arrested for driving while black in America. It was almost like, you know, governing for while being elected. And we come into this issue where you have, you know, I was speaking about this before we got you on, that we have all this propaganda and ballyhooing of trying to spread democracy, but then, and you and I have spoken about this at length, then, you know, the Palestinians have their elections. They elect Hamas because Hamas, as you have told me, if I understand correctly, had actually been doing a little bit more on the ground for the Palestinian people later on in the game.
Yeah.
That it was obvious that they would put these people into power.
Mm. What's also very interesting and worrying about what Israel does in the occupied territories is that this form of collective punishment is very similar to what the US is doing in Iraq and Afghanistan, for that matter. In fact, what's extraordinary and so little reported, for very political reasons, is the sensitivity, as you well know and your listeners will know, about discussing Israeli involvement in anything. You're accused of being anti-Semitic if you're non-Jewish, and a self-hating Jew such as myself, if you do it there, which is ridiculous. But the way in which the US in Iraq is using collective punishment in numerous towns, Fallujah, Ramadi, many others, those techniques were taught by the Israelis. When the Americans went into Iraq in early 2003, there's lots of evidence to suggest, it's not particularly hidden, that the Israelis were teaching the US how to conduct an occupation, how to deal with an insurgency. Now, there's also been evidence to suggest that there are a number of Israeli agents at Abu Ghraib, which is, I can't prove that, obviously, but I've been told that's one of the women, Karen Kozlowski, I think that's how you pronounce her last name, she was one of the people who were there, who's since sort of been a bit of a whistleblower since Abu Ghraib. and said that she saw, and she was dealing with a number of Israeli agents who were in Abu Ghraib teaching the Americans how to do torture better. Now, the reason I mention that in this context is that so much of what we see Israel doing now in Gaza, bombing the electricity grid, which is a war crime, which I did a few days ago. No one, of course, condemns that because, well, they just don't. I mean, it's the nature of how this debate occurs, that if it's committed by Arabs, it's terrorism. If it's committed by us, it's a form of sort of, benign intervention. That the kind of collective punishment mentality which exists is bound to cause, as we've seen in Iraq and as we've seen in Palestine, a response. How could there not be a response? You know, it's inevitable.
Well, it is inevitable, and when I first heard this now not yet confirmed report, which now I'm going to put in the back of my mind as being smoke, even just the reporting of such a thing has to be a bit of a problem for the area just because of the high tensions. And the other thing is that's happened the last couple of days was the flyby on the Syrian president, prime minister and his family in all this as kind of a way to tell them to, like, just not get involved?
Well, the reason that Israel has given to do that, which, again, of course, is a legal under international law, but, you know, international law seems to be violated on a regular basis, so in some ways it seems pointless to even mention it, is that the Hamas leadership is based in Damascus, the capital of Syria, and the Syrian government has provided support to Hamas for many, many years. So the thinking, I presume, from Israel's perspective is that, well, we're giving Syria warning to not be more involved. Oh, and then the irony, of course, is that who was actually behind the original militant attack last week on these and this Israeli army base is impossible to say. I really don't know. But it seems to me that Israel has almost perfected the art of escalation and also has perfected the art, more importantly, of disproportionate force. No one's suggesting for a second that the Israelis would not want to get back their kidnapped soldier. That's a reasonable desire to get them.
Right.
Any country would want to get their soldier back, as what happens with the Americans when those two soldiers who were captured and obviously tortured and tragically killed.
Well, this is where things like the Geneva Convention are supposed to come in and create those vehicles.
When one writes about Israel and when one writes about these issues, one realizes very quickly, of course, the Geneva Conventions, they're irrelevant. Not that I think they're irrelevant, but they are. The governments regularly ignore them. And, of course, we've seen that just with the Supreme Court decision today in the U.S. in relation to Guantanamo Bay, that the military tribunals and much of what the Bush administration is doing was deemed to be illegal. But as much as many people on the progressive side of politics are excited by that ruling, and I am excited by it as well, the reality is, from what I've read initially, is a good chance the Bush administration's policies will not change at all.
Right. In fact, Bob Kincaid, who produces this show and is on before me, he interviewed a gentleman who wrote, it's a book, right, Bob? Guantanamo, and it was an English gentleman, and basically saying that the decision that just came down, David Rose, the decision that just came down is effectively that he won, but he didn't, but his lawyer can tell him he won, but nothing changes.
Well, indeed, and of course what's already happened, the Bush administration has already come out and says they want to try and do something through Congress to try and make sure that their policies can stay in place. Look, the fact is that until there's a change of government, and I'm not even convinced it would change if the Democrats got in, because so much of the leadership of the Democrats at the moment are hardly coming out, the ones who are likely to run, should I say, for president, Hillary Clinton being one of the main ones, are hardly...
We're working hard to make sure that doesn't happen, Anthony, because we know that she's just not a good choice.
Very, very good thing for you to do. But nonetheless, it's difficult to look forward and say that decisions like when the Supreme Court hands down this kind of thing that, you know, you'd think that would be the end of it, but it's not. And in Israel, the wider context, of course, is that Israel holds thousands of individuals in what's called administrative detention. And again, we have the same situation here where what the U.S. is doing at Guantanamo Bay has been in many ways copied from what the Israelis do. If one reads a book by Robert Fisk called Pity the Nation, which is his book about the Lebanon Civil War, one reads, and it's quite extraordinary, because so much of what the U.S. is doing, particularly since 9/11, in terms of torture, in terms of holding people without charge indefinitely, in terms of collective punishment, all those tactics have been used, perfected, and taught by the Israelis. Now, I don't say that in a conspiratorial way. It's on the record. It's a fact. Although one rarely, if ever, reads about it. So much of what the U.S. is doing now, not just in Iraq and Afghanistan, but elsewhere, and this whole issue of extraordinary rendition, which I always think is such a pointless term because it sounds so harmless.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like collateral damage and all that kind of stuff.
So Israel's holding numerous individuals without trial indefinitely, including children and women, and there's torture. I mean, it's not open, but it's known. There's torture. So yet again, we have a situation where Israel claims they have the right to reinvade Gaza to find one kidnapped soldier, and yet there are thousands of Palestinians who are languishing in Israeli jails without trial for years. And from what I can tell, the world doesn't really get too excited about that because, well, they're Palestinians and therefore they're kind of, you know, they're obviously going to be terrorists, right? So the thinking goes.
Yeah, and who was it that recently basically said out loud that Palestinian lives weren't worth as much as Israeli lives?
Well, that was actually Ehud Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel.
Right.
He had a very revealing
statement. These are the things that you really have to shine the light on, these moments of clarity that come out of these people.
Absolutely.
Because, this unfortunately ends up being, you know, just more mess in this mix, which is, you know, the Middle East and Iraq and Iran and all this.
Very much.
Do you see that it's only going to escalate? What do you see are the possibilities of where things will move from here? Because they just seem to be at kind of like a new level again of kind of like hot point that we haven't seen in a while.
Well, it's always very hard to say in these situations. I would like to think that the oft talked about international community, whatever that means, which basically means the US and Europe, would do their darndest to try and stop a third intifada or uprising, which has been talked about for a long time in the occupied territories. That is the furthest thing we would want, because A, that would cause devastation in West Bank and Gaza. It would restart suicide bombings in Israel proper. It would be ugly, and we really hope that doesn't happen. What I'd like to think would happen is that there'd be some sense would prevail. But of course, what's also important to notice is that there has been a unspoken policy for a number of years by the Israelis to try and push Palestinians out. If you notice, for example, in the last days, the Israeli Air Force drops flyers over refugee camps and says, by the way, you might want to get out of here, guys, because we're about to bomb you. Literally, but you know, the messages are quite unequivocal. Now, where people are supposed to go, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, the living refugee camps as it is, and this is what happens in the U.S. as well, so in Iraq as well, as I'm sure you know. There have been numerous examples where the U.S. wants to go into Fallujah, for example. They drop flyers in Fallujah saying, oh yes, please don't leave your house or please leave immediately. Where are they supposed to go? They're refugees in their own country.
Right. They have no infrastructure. They have no local police force. They have nowhere to go. So, I mean, do you think it's just for more destruction of life that they just continue to bomb the same people?
I think the mentality for successive Israeli governments, and I think it's important to note, of course, that the Palestinian side is not blameless in all this. There's obviously lots of internal problems. There's a lot of issues there. There's a lot of conflict between Hamas and Fatah, which is the party that lost in January in the elections. That was the party that was led by Arafat for 40 years, many of which were incredibly corrupt. So, look, there's fault on on all sides. One's not, you know, it's important to note that. But the reality is that the fundamental point remains that Israel maintains an occupation and has for nearly 40 years. It's the 40-year anniversary. It's a good anniversary in 2007. Now, what seems extraordinary in so much of the debates that go on about this subject is how little the occupation is talked about. It'd be like talking about Iraq and not mentioning the minor detail that there's actually a foreign occupation there. You know, it'd be like talking about Afghanistan and sort of ignoring the fact that there are tens of thousands of foreign troops in Afghanistan. And one thing I think also which is important to note is that, and this is across the board, I think, in Iraq as well, but so much of the rhetoric about democracy and freedom, as you talked about before, is about, you know, making people in the Middle East, you know, understand, you know, what you and I experience every day in Australia or America or Britain or wherever it might be. But, of course, there's also a fundamental distaste and dislike of Arab people, because Arab people, and I can't understand this, a lot of people who are in positions of power fail to actually understand why people in the Middle East, a lot of them anyway, a lot of Muslims, dislike intensely US policies. There's a fundamental misunderstanding when they say, you know, we brought you democracy, and you complain. You know, and if you go to the Middle East, which I did last year, and you speak to a lot of people, you know, of course there's people, you know, in the Middle East who are very supportive of the US. The irony is a lot of people love the US, but detest the government. There's an important distinction there, which is rarely, if ever, made in the course.
Well, I think it's a distinction, though, that over the last couple of years is starting to be lost worldwide. I've been getting the impression that a lot of Europe now just really has no more patience for the American people, because it's the when we reelected George W. Bush, it was like, okay, you can make the mistake once, but to go and do it again?
Yeah, well, exactly. And of course, but what's interesting, and this is what, of course, America fears, is the rise of the power of the EU. Now, the EU, as it stands today, is not the power of the US, but it's growing, and it's going to increasingly become a force of its own, which I think is a good thing, with all its problems. Every institution has got problems. And, of course, one thing which has not been greatly discussed, of course, with Europe, is the collusion of many European governments in extraordinary rendition. Some of this information is starting to come out now, that you have numerous European governments which have been openly allowing CIA flights to come and go and cross their airspace, taking, you know, suspected terrorists to torture camps. I mean, for example, as I'm sure you know, there's been a lot of evidence to suggest some of these camps existed in Romania and Poland, two countries, unsurprisingly, that are desperate for US aid, particularly Romania. And I actually just read today, funnily enough, that Romania is pulling its 1,000 troops out of Iraq, which is quite interesting. It's got no coverage here. I didn't even know they had that many troops there, but they do. I think, a lot of European people are very suspicious of the US, of the government, because they see a superpower which is rapacious and arrogant. And
well, yeah, that's exactly what I actually listened. I got stuck into for an hour. Can you believe the Jerry Springer radio show?
Well,
but the only reason that happened is because he was over in Germany for the World Cup.
Right.
And he was talking about the fact that every single time he entered a new group of people, he spent the first 10 minutes defending the United States before they could get on with the conversation, and it didn't did not matter where they came from. And he said since the last time he had been in Europe, the view of Americans has changed.
What's really interesting is when one sees the debate in America about this kind of thing, it's simply seen as, you know, they're Europeans and they wouldn't understand what war's like. It's like, well, actually, you know.
Oh, and they're jealous of us. That's my personal favorite.
And my feeling about that kind of thing is that kind of rhetoric, I sort of say to the people who say that in the U.S., keep saying it, guys, because the fact of the matter is the power of the U.S. is declining at a rapid rate, economically and militarily. One doesn't often think of that now because the military in the U.S. is so overpowering. But the fact of the matter is that Iraq has dealt a serious blow to America's ability and its perception around the world. The people would say, you have the most powerful military in the world, unquestionably, and yet you are totally incapable of occupying a country, not that they shouldn't be there in the first place, but the fact that they are there, they're incapable of providing security for 25 million Iraqis.
I still think that they had no intention of providing security, Anthony. Well, I really think that this is going very much according to plan, because it keeps control of the Iraqi oil in the coalition's hands and keeps the Iraqi oil off the market, which keeps the price even higher. I think it's going according to plan. Exactly.
Point taken. I guess, and that's sort of the truth of that story. Hopefully, will come out. I don't think actually necessarily you're wrong. I don't know. I think there's arguments to be made for both sides for that. What is still what I find extraordinary, and this is the level of arrogance that I'm talking about, is that the belief of a number of individuals in the Bush administration, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Doug Feist, amongst others, who did, I think, believe, from what I can tell, that when the US went into Iraq, they would be greeted with hugs and flowers and whatever. There was a real belief that America, with all its history in the Middle East, which has hardly been very glorious in the last 50 years, to say the least, particularly in course of supporting Saddam for many of those years, would be greater liberators. Now, we often hear that rhetoric, but we often think it's incomprehensible that people like Cheney and co. would have thought that. But I actually think it's even more scary to think that they actually probably did think that.
Well, I mean, you've read the plan for a new American century. The way that thing's written is that they really believed that world peace would come via the U.S. military might.
Yeah.
And that's psychotic, in my opinion. But you're right. They probably did believe it. And that is a very frightening prospect.
Of course, what's also interesting about the U.S. plans, I think there's no question that had Iraq gone better, what I mean by that is that had the occupation been, shall we say, well, more favorable to the U.S., Iran and or Syria would have been a lot more troubled than they are now. I don't think there's any question about that, which I think is for that reason, I think, if no other reason, I've often thought this and suffer a lot of attacks for saying so, that I think for the Iraqi people, the invasion of Iraq has been an absolute catastrophe, and the amount of Iraqi deaths is anywhere probably between 100 and 300,000 people. It's so impossible to tell this, but I do think that sort of figure is probably conservative. I spoke last week to Dar Jamal, who's one of the best independent journalists, who's actually now based in the US, but he spent lots of time in Iraq. Not so much recently, because it's too dangerous to go there. And he said to me that his sources do say to him that, I mean, you can argue that talking about figures is quite morbid, but I think it's important that the amount of Iraqi deaths, and haven't all been caused by U.S. troops, of course, but nonetheless, the result of the invasion and occupation is anywhere between 100 and 300,000 Iraqis. Now, if you think about that kind of figure per capita, and then you sort of plant that to the US or Australia, to think that many Australians or Americans would have died because of an invasion is really quite incomprehensible. And I think what is important, though, about the way in which the US has gone in Iraq is that it has given the US powers that be a real bloody nose, which I do think is important, because otherwise, rest assured, they would have kept on marching straight to Tehran or Damascus. Believe it.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it for a second, Anthony. I really thank you so much for your time today. And we're going to have you back on when the book comes out in a few short weeks, My
course,
Israel
course.
Question.
August the 1st. Always do it.
Yeah. And your perspective on this is just, I swear, it's the best thing that I've ever found. And I'm so proud to call you my personal friend. And we're going to have you on very, very soon. Ladies and gentlemen, just big thank you to Anthony Lowenstein from Sydney, Australia. You can get him at anthonylowenstein.com. There's a link on the show post from today. Thanks again, Anthony, and have a great day.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, everybody. We're going to take a quick break, come back and wrap things up. I told you the guy was good. You know, he's stuck right in the middle of it, as in the middle of it you could be. And, yeah, it's really nice to speak about this subject with some balance and some Oh, you know, just pulling the emotion out of it a little bit, but yet still seeing the humanity in all sides. And I think that's a place that we need to go, you know? So anyway, we're going to pop out to a quick break here. I need a drink of water. We're going to come back and wrap things up here for Foxed Up on a Thursday night. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Welcome back to Foxed Up. That's right. Set it off. Set it off, my children of the night. let's turn this thing around. And big, big thank yous to Anthony Lowenstein for ringing in. His perspective is just brilliant. And we'll be talking to him in a few short weeks on the release of his book, My Israel Question, which it's already been rough, stirring up the seas over here. And John Pilger is quoted on the front saying something to the effect of, there is no more important book on this subject written by an Australian ever. Something to that effect. But anyway, go by Anthony's blog at AnthonyLowenstein.com, and you'll have everything that happens over there. And some really great commentary and some pretty fiery discussion in his commenting as well. But we're just about done for the Horn Broadcasting Day. Must thank my wonderful producers tonight, Agnes and Bob Kincaid, bringing the show out of West Virginia. It's brilliant. Another great night of music, too. You guys are just great. I just love kicking in with whatever you throw at me. And don't forget, the stream kicks straight off at 2 p.m. tomorrow afternoon with Mr. Mark Levine. Going straight into Guy James from 3 to 5, Bruce Birch from 5 to 7, Head On with Bob Kincaid from 7 to 10, and the final one for this little test run of me, Foxed Up, for this week, and we'll bring this thing back in a few weeks for some full-time action, but, you know, got to play around with the dials a little bit, see how things go. But thank you so much for joining me again for another very, very fun 3 hours. Let me know what you think of the show. Drop me an email, john@fourthestateradio.com. Leave a comment at the blog. And don't forget, if you want to really, really keep up to date with what's happening at the Horn, you click on our subscribe page at the blog. You stick your email address in. And every time we post that something's happening on the horn, a little alert will pop up in your email box. How cool is that? And we're going to have some street team gear coming up soon. So if you have a blog or you have a website and you want to tell more and more people about the Horn, there's going to be some little bits of toys and web thingies for you to stick on your website that send people over to the Horn. We're even going to have a little thing up there that you can stick on your website that shows what's on right now, and they can listen live with a click. Sounds pretty cool to me. See, we're bringing this thing up one step at a time, 1 hour of programming at a time, or three at a time, depending on what we do. But anyway, folks, please, please, please tune in to the whole lineup tomorrow. Go by WhiteRoseSociety.org. Drop Mr. Ben Birch a dime. Go by TravisMeeks.com. Check out some of the videos of the Days of the New. Maybe even drop him an email and tell him that you heard about him and his band here on the Head On Radio Network. Because we don't push what's big. We push what's good. We push what's right. And so maybe we'll bring you some more less than often heard of music tomorrow. And well, I guess we're probably getting right up on about closing song time there, Agnes. Again, everybody, thank you so much. Thanks to Bruce, Ben, Bob, Agnes. You guys helped kick this thing through. Hello to my lovely partner, Gail, who's stuck at work. I'll see you in a couple of hours. I love you. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you.
Yeah, that's us doing it all the time. We learned this little ditty from her, and we hope you enjoy it. And if you know it, sing along.
Yes, I'd love to have you join us if you remember it, Mikey.
Baby, start me up. Baby, start me up. We'll never stop. Baby, start me up. Turn me up. Baby, start me up. We'll never stop. I've been running hard, running hard. But you got me ticking for the full time. Baby, start me up. Turn me up. Baby, start me up. We'll never stop. You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
The oil, the gasoline, I ride smooth, she's a clean machine. So let's start it up.
Start it up.
You want to start again, all you got. I can't compete.
Can't compete.
With the riders in the air.
Rough It Up.
Rough It Up.
Hey, if you like it, you can